Hey, Dan, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How's it going for you, Jason?
Busy, busy time, busy time.
Yeah.
I had all these visitors last week.
Those guys, freeloaders, I think is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, sure, exactly. But now everybody's gone.
Oh, so and you got the post WWC blues.
Yeah, so WWDC is come and gone, and then I got, I spent the last few days with the beta of macOS Sierra.
Oh, I could hear you eliding the 10 there. I could hear the pause. There's no macOS 10. It's just macOS Sierra.
No macOS Sierra. Sierra is the
pregnant,
next thing you
pause.
Say. Next thing you say after macOS is Sierra. You say Mac again.
Takes some getting used to.
It really does. It really does. And I was very diligent in my whole article about it that I posted on Tuesday. And then, of course, Wednesday morning. And then I wrote it mostly on Tuesday. And then I tweeted out about it. And I tweeted out macOS 10 Sierra. Just like, of course.
Son of a...
Of course. I said my words were a developer beta, too. So it's okay. It's all right.
I noticed you had some impressions about that beta, both on Six Colors and over at Macworld.
Yeah, I did some some voices, some celebrity impressions. Now, it was funny too because there were a bunch of stories that dropped at once. Apple gave a bunch of members of the press briefings about it and laptops with the developer beta on it and said, please write about this. Which honestly, they have done for the last few years now, and it was a big change when they did it to say, we're gonna actually let, because technically you're not supposed to write about it. Because it's a developer beta and there's developer NDAs and things like that, but they have made an effort to reach out to a lot of members of the press and say, no, go ahead, take it for a spin, hear what our pitch is about it, and then go ahead and write about it. So I went down to Apple on Monday and got a briefing and got the 13-inch MacBook Pro with it installed on it, which is nice because I didn't have to install it on one of my Macs here, which for a first beta, it's always a little bit scary to do that.
Yeah, right, sure.
I was saying on Clockwise yesterday that ultimately I have to install betas, we all do, on real systems that we use, because eventually there's no alternative. Eventually,
yeah, there's no substitute for living with it, right? Like, you can have it on a test device and you can play around with it, but unless you're like really using it for your everyday, it's hard to really know exactly how it's going to act in all those situations, right? Because otherwise it feels kind of artificial if you're just like, oh, I'll play around with it from time to time.
Well, it's not your data. And I guess I could like clone my data and then have my Dropbox files and then do it that way. But then, then your data can get out of sync at that point.
Yeah, that's a mess.
It's not your real computer at that point.
Right.
So at some point you do have to commit, and it's problematic. I mean, last summer when I went to El Capitan and the operating system, not The Rock. I have been to the Yosemite and El Capitan too, but not last summer. I had podcast problems. I had some severe podcast problems where USB audio devices were problematic in El Capitan in general, like even now are a little bit weird, but during the beta, it was a disaster. With USB audio, and which is how I do podcasts. That's where my microphones are plugged in. And it was a problem to the point where what I ended up doing I ended up wiping my little boot camp partition that I had and replacing it with a generic Yosemite and rebooting into Yosemite when I wanted to record a podcast and then rebooting back into El Capitan. It was not great. It was not, and I had a couple of podcasts that were huge problems to edit because of various failures that happened during them. So, it is problematic to have that. So I'm not quite sure how I'm going to approach it this year, how I'm going to do it, whether I'm going to do the partition dance again or something else. I do have a second Mac. I have my MacBook Air, so I could always keep it. In fact, I kept my MacBook Air on Yosemite for quite a while after El Capitan came out as a, you know, having something on the previous operating system as a reference and also as a fallback.
Yep.
But I don't know. And the same goes for iPhones and stuff like that, right? Which is, at one point, having an iPhone that runs iOS 10 is great, but it's not your iPhone. And at some point, you need to run it on your stuff.
Well, and you're going to run it even more complicated with the addition of the watch, because you then need to pair your watch. And if you want to use the watch OS 3 beta, it's got to be paired with something running the iOS 10 beta. And so you either have to unpair your watch from your current phone and pair it with another phone, which is also kind of a mess. Or you have to update them both, right? So, you know, this has become even more... And I think as we talked a little bit about this on Clockwise this week, but, you know, as Apple's devices get more and more interoperable and talk to each other more, it becomes a slippery slope, because as soon as you start updating beta elements of, say, you update your Mac to Sierra, it's like, I want to test auto unlock. Well, now I need watchOS 3, but to do watchOS 3, I need iOS 10. Well, while you're at it, you might as well update to the tvOS beta, right? Because that'll add some functionality as well. Now you have all your stuff running on beta, which is great, because as soon as something catches fire, you're just you just need to find a new job, I guess.
You've ruined your entire life. Yeah.
Yep. Thanks, Obama.
It's a thing. It's the challenge, and the answer is to not do it unless you're but we have to do it, because we have to write about it. Like, I'm going to have to update my book about photos, which means I'm going to have to spend a lot of time with not just running Sierra, but running my photo library.
Right.
I need to use all the features, and yeah, so that's going to be a challenge. But we have to do that. I guess I'm not saying it to complain, like, oh, woe are the people who write about technology. More to say, like, we don't be like us.
Yeah, we live on the edge, but because that is what we do. That's what we do for you as listeners and readers. This is a service we provide, so you don't have to.
Yeah, but it is a conundrum, because you're always excited about trying out the new stuff, and then there are always issues. Right. I remember at one point I had a beta on my iPhone. Maybe it was iOS 8, and there were like favorite apps that I liked that I just, for that summer, I couldn't use.
Because they just crashed. Yeah, there are a lot of times where you run apps and they're just like, they don't work well on the beta because they're not, I mean, the worst is when people, of course, used to complain about that and write reviews on the App Store and be like, oh, this crashes all the time. And the developers be like, are you running beta software? And they're like, well, yeah.
Beta software that we didn't even know existed when we released our software. So there are sometimes, because the developers are living with it too, you know, sometimes they will release bug fixes over the summer that are adding compatibility with the new OS,
because they want it to be ready too when it drops for everybody
else. But sometimes
some
developers will wait until it comes out. Other developers will push it out over the summer because they know that there are people. Now that there's a public beta, it makes it even more of an issue. But I think the way it works now, if you're a developer, is if you've got a crashing bug in the new OS, most developers try to get it fixed by the public beta, only because it will save them a lot of support issues if it runs. But it's also asking kind of a lot of developers to update that stuff for a public beta. But that's where we are, at least they get it, you know, they get that work done up front, and then see if they've got a new version that they're also working on for down the road that takes advantage of the new features of the new operating system. I don't know. It's funny. It's a funny time. This is that, you know, moments of transition, and so many people, whether you're a user, but especially for developers and people who write about this stuff, it's fun. This is my kids got out of school the last couple of weeks. And so my son got out of school, as he usually does, like the week of WWDC. And I always find the week after, it's like, oh yeah, it's summer. And it's not just summer because the kids are at home, but it's also summer because
we're doing the beta dance.
Horizons are different, right? Because now it's like, we know what the next big thing is. We know, we've seen a first version of it. And we've got the summer to, you know, do what we need to do to be ready for that. And that's, it's fun. It's seasonal. I mean, it really is like, this is what summer is new OSs from Apple.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, it's in the same way that it's the blockbuster movie season, right? Like,
right.
Blockbuster movies, betas, you know, camp. That's basically, I guess, what summer is.
I feel like it's always blockbuster movie season now.
Well, that's a creeping phenomenon, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're colonizing every single month now with blockbuster movies. I mean, Captain America Civil War was in May, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it seems so long ago now, and yet this was the my first week of summer is this week, and yet that, you know, that movie was months ago, weeks ago.
Yeah, it creeps out, right? Like, because then you get the fall stuff, and you get like the Oscar bait in the fall.
I suppose, is Hollywood making Oscar bait anymore? This is not a movie podcast, but...
It happens. And then you get the stuff in January and February, which is my favorite, which is all the stuff that didn't make it out in time for Christmas, you know, essentially gets pushed off because they realize it's not very good.
That's the Leprechaun era where, do you remember that movie Leprechaon?
I know of it. I've confessed I've never watched it.
I remember it being advertised and it came out. I don't think it came out. Did it come out St. Patrick's Day? I think it might have come out before that. But yeah, there's that moment of like, hey, it's the very beginning of January. Here's a horror movie, and you're like, yeah, I think this is probably just to fill up space in the theaters when nobody wants to see anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
that's
Leprechaun.
January through March, basically.
Starring Jennifer Aniston, not as the Leprechaun.
Good for her.
She's not the Leprechaun.
She never went on to anything else, though, so that's a...
I've never seen any of those movies, although I did listen to, I want to say it's a Flophouse episode, about Leprechaun, like a sequel or a reboot of the Leprechaun franchise, which I almost had to stop my car when I heard that. Like, really? Anyway, they're still making bad movies and they're still making blockbuster movies. But yeah, I suppose summer and like December are the big times for, you know, the holidays are the big times for movies. But I've got some movies on my list for the summer, but I've also got like, you know, computer things. Sierra.
Stuff to do, you know, work. Work
iOS 10, watch OS 3. Oh, I want to install OS 3
badly. This is where I am, and I sit there thinking, God,
every day I think about it.
Do I want to put beta 1 on my actual phone? And they're like,
no,
I really don't. I mean, you know, I think beta 3, beta 4, you get to that point, like, okay, it's maybe a little more plausible, especially once the public beta comes out.
Beta,
you feel like there's a stable milepost there. Okay, sure. I'm going to play around with this. I'm going to install it. That way I can use the watch. And the watch, I think what's frustrating is I have no problem doing, you know, installing a beta software on the watch because the watch is not crucial to my everyday activity. It's still a thing that's nice. It's cool. I'm really excited for watchOS 3 making it more integral to my daily life, but it really isn't. So I have no problem with going ahead and installing beta software. It's that my phone is integral to my daily life and I need to update that in order to use the watch. You know, I debated unpairing it and pairing it with this test phone I have running the iOS 10 beta and also decided, well, now I have to carry two phones if I want to wear my watch, which seems dumb.
Yeah, this is my phone and this is my watch phone.
This is my watch phone. I could just tape them together, I guess. Yeah. There you go.
Well, and your other phone doesn't have a SIM card in it, right? So it's going to not be on the internet when you're out and about anyway.
I could swap the SIM card back and forth,
just tether.
But that's a different mess.
Tether one to the other.
Yeah, that's
as they're taped together.
It's yeah. I mean, it doesn't have a SIM card. It also doesn't have a touch or a 3D touch.
Do
so
the Velcro thing where you do like Velcro
like
on each of them
the
and then just Velcro them together.
You know, they'd still almost be smaller than like my old Palm Pilot.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, I working at home, I don't use my iPhone as much as I use my other devices. I know that for some people, the iPhone is the workhorse. It really isn't for me. I use it for podcasts. Obviously, I use it when I'm out and about, but I'm not out and about that much, unless I'm doing something like WWDC. And so I thought about that for me, maybe the bar of installing it on my phone is a little bit lower because of that I might be better off installing it on my phone rather than my iPad, because I do use my iPad a whole lot more, and that if the apps start breaking on the iPad, I'm going to be sadder. So I've thought about that, and that's the voice, that's the devil on the one shoulder saying, do it, get watchOS beta on, do it now. And then the other one's like, yeah, everything's going to crash if you do that. Don't do it. So I'm still fighting that battle, but I may get there. It may be like beta 2, may be enough for me. Yeah, because the watch is going to be so much. Even in beta, what I've heard from people who've done it is like, yeah, it's a lot better. It's better already, but I don't know. Patience.
That is the patience is the big question, right? Like, and I mean, like you said, we need to live with it eventually in order to write about it. And it is tempting just because we want all those features, but you know, there has to be, there is a line to walk there because, and the problem I always run into, especially when doing new versions, is like you mentioned, like keeping a reference system around. I have multiple Macs. It's not that hard. I often install beta stuff on my MacBook Air first, just because I use it a lot, but it's not my workhorse machine, so I can spare it. But you know, you also want having the ability to refer back to something and say, okay, is this new or how is this different in the previous version? And so maintaining something on an older version of the operating system is often useful. And as such, I also used to update my iPad to betas first, generally because, like, again, it wasn't as critical to me. But then you end up with the difference between stuff on the iPad and stuff on the iPhone. It's not always implemented the same. It doesn't have all the same features, and especially as they're getting sort of more hardware disparate, you don't have things like 3D touch. You know, it gets harder to use that as a representative example. So,
sure.
The answer is you need like 6 copies of every device.
Yeah, which developers have many of them.
Yeah,
but not us so much. So, yeah. Well, it's a funny time. So yeah, so Sierra, I used it. There's a lot of stuff in it. There's stuff I couldn't use because I can't like do the. I don't think the auto unlock feature is actually in the first beta, but I haven't updated my watch, so even if it was, I couldn't do it. I did see there was the person who gave me the demo did, you know, did that with his Apple Watch, and you know, it's a special build or it's canned in some way, but you know, I saw it and it, like that it works, right? I would have loved that feature when I was in an office. So I extrapolate for that because I had my laptop. My laptop is still locked, actually. My iMac is not, because quite frankly, I've got bigger security problems if somebody is in my garage.
Fair point. Mine actually is, even though it is in my office, which is in my house, which has locks and, you know, windows and all those modern conveniences.
You're better than me then.
No, I don't know. I think I'm a little more paranoid, and I like the idea that I can, although I'm going to give away my secret to someone who's listening to this podcast, you can break into my house.
Code is password 1.
I have my Mac Mini hooked up, which you know, serves as a file server that has no password on it, because I'm not going to enter a password every time. You know, it's connected to a TV.
Yeah. You've given everything away now.
I have. So if you break in, steal the Mac Mini. That's the good thing. Or just steal the hard drive attached to it. Really, you know, hey, that's probably even easier.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. No, when people were over here last week, I think Casey Liss needed to log into his Synology server, and I said, just use the iMac. And he looked at me, and then and there was like a pause, and then he said, is there no password on it? I said, no, there's no password on it.
You know, it's funny. Not,
my laptop goes around and it's got a password on it,
right,
but it's
sure.
Like I just had that moment of thinking, am I going to put a password? I'm the only one who uses this computer. Am I going to put a password on it and have to enter it every single day? Or am I just going to say, nah, it's fine? And the answer was, meh, it's fine.
Now that I have a watch, I won't need to do that.
I suppose that's true. Good point.
I think it's the remote access thing, actually, now that I brought up Casey, is that was a weird situation for me last week, which is I have all my computers here set up to be accessible from outside the network. And I, you know, so sometimes there are files or I want to run tests or I need something from there. And so you know, I have all those set up for remote screen sharing, and I have a VPN, and I can SSH into them and all this stuff. And so I was using it early in the week, and it was fine. And then, like, Tuesday or something last week, I found I couldn't get in.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on? And so I started, like, trying all these different things, working around it. And I'm like, nope, there's nothing. It's just not working. I don't know if I lost my IP address or something. The router went belly up or whatever. So finally, I got back on, like, late Saturday night, and I'm like, what is going on? And I realized there was a power outage, and all the computers turned off, and they did not come back on.
Oh,
yeah. So,
there's that little box.
Do it.
There's that box you can check. That is,
I know, and I thought I had. I swear, I thought it was set up on my Mac Mini, and it apparently did not restart. And that really that was a problem. So I've double checked it now, and hopefully next time that will not be an issue. But it was unfortunate that it just like, oh, yep, that's the one thing you can't run those computers without is power.
Yeah, I've got I've got a UPS here, uninterruptible power supply, little box, little backup battery box that my iMac is attached to. It doesn't last very long, but it's long enough to shut down gracefully when the when the power goes out. And in fact, it's got, for people, I don't know if it's worth it for your stuff in the in a situation like this, but it's, you know, it's smart. It's got a USB attachment to my computer, and then my, my iMac sees it as like a laptop battery almost. And there's a set, it knows it's a UPS, and there's a setting in the energy saver settings that is to shut down, when to shut down the computer when it's on UPS. So it's like shut it down immediately, shut it down after a time period, shut it down with a certain amount of time left on the battery, or shut it down at a certain battery percentage. But what that means is that you can actually set up a computer to auto kind of auto power down when gracefully when there's a power outage. I don't think you can use that and use the when power is restored though. Unless the UPS is smart enough to do that. Maybe it is. Maybe it's a, it's smart enough to send a power on signal or something when the power comes back. I think that would be a problem. I used to have this when I ran servers way back in the day. And I've seen this happen where my router got in a weird position. And so even my though my servers were running, I couldn't get to them. And I was on a vacation. I was on a week-long vacation. And it was day two. And I couldn't get to any of my stuff.
You just give up at that point. Yeah,
to be
done.
The old way to do it, and this is totally ridiculous, but the old way to do it was I used to have a power strip that had a phone plug in it. And you plug that in, and you could dial, there was like something you could do. You could like ring the line a couple of times in succession. Like you, if you called and rang the phone a couple of times, like three or four times in a row or something, it would do a hard like power off, power back on.
Fascinating.
And that was that back in the day, or maybe it picked up and you could put in a, you could put in a code. It was something like that though. And that was the idea, is like, how do you get to the ultimate troubleshooting of any electronics, which is turn it on, turn it off, turn it back on, right? And that was that, that, those smart power strips did that. I'm sure there's some equivalent now. The challenge is if they're not, if these are smart things and they're on the internet, but they're not on the internet because of a failure of your network.
Right. There's just nothing you can do.
What do you do then? And, I remember actually my best friend ran a computer bulletin board when I was in like seventh and eighth grade, and he was on a vacation for a week, and the PBS crashed. And I actually, I called his aunt. And she she unlocked their door, and I rebooted his Apple II, and I literally walked into his house and went, held down three buttons, three keys, boop, and then walked back out and said, thanks, that's all. And then it was fine the rest of the time. So, you know, but so yes, well, somebody could come over to your house.
Yeah,
hello,
can you, low-tech version.
Can you unplug my router and plug it back in?
Well, so it's interesting because I had briefly, there was a link to a Wirecutter UPS review the other day, and I was like, oh man, maybe I should invest in one of those. And they pointed out like, oh, this one's pretty good. You can, you know, keep your network running, like your router running for like a couple hours. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And then I realized the key problem I have is that my router and my modem are in two different rooms.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's, mine too.
So yeah, so much for that. So either I got to buy two or run a really long extension cord, or, you know, just say, eh, never mind.
Yeah, that's one of these days I'm going to move my my cable modem in to my office. It's currently in the living room. One of these days I'm going to move it into my office, and then that will enable me to hook it and the Ethernet hub and the router, all like it'll be able to hook them together on the UPS.
Yeah, and my problem is that my cable is for the coaxial cable coming into my house is like stapled to the wall, so that will actually require some extra work.
Yeah, my cable actually is running right past the outside of my office. It just doesn't come in here. It comes in the next room over. But yeah, I mean, really, for me, I got the UPS not to stay on the internet, but just so that I could keep working if there was a flicker. And actually, every now and then, there's a power flicker, and I hear it beep, and the computer just stays, is just fine. It actually sends me an alert. It says, oh, the power is off, and then it comes back on, but it's just a fluctuation. So right, I kind of like, I like that. And like, if there is a sudden, it actually did happen, two or three weeks ago that the power went out for a couple of hours and I was sitting here and the light went out, but the computer kept going, and then I got the alert that the power was out, and I was like, huh, and it didn't come back. But it allowed me to sort of like save my stuff, and I could have, if I was writing something and I needed to get it on a another device, I actually tethered to my iPhone to get it to stay on the internet for a couple of minutes. But it would have enabled me to get my works to work to another computer if I needed to. And then I could, you know, go somewhere else or use some device with a battery. And that's why I bought it, was to have, I figured, you know, you never know when the power is going to go out, and being able to have some continuity there and not just curse, you know, because that's the thing, is I've got a lot of battery powered items, but this isn't one of them, this iMac. And if I'm working on a story and the power just goes out, I can't get to the story I was working on, even if I can go work on another device. So the UPS was a good buy. It's huge, you know, but I'm happy that I have it. And I've already, you know, I have now taken advantage of it a couple of times when we've had a power outage.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good thing for redundancy. I feel like in general, machines these days are more resilient than they used to be about getting interrupted. It's still not, you know, not something you want to do if you don't have to. But
it's not ideal. Well, my server isn't on the UPS, so my server went down, and when the power went out and it came back, it was unhappy for a little while and was kind of looking at itself and thinking about life before it finally, you know, stabilized.
Yeah, running a server all the time has its upsides and downsides, that's for sure.
Don't run your server upside down.
Unless you really want to. I mean, don't let us tell you what to do.
All right, that's a good point.
Probably won't hurt anything.
All right, well, so we'll be back next week, won't we? Will we? You're not going anywhere next week, are you?
No, I'll be here.
You did your big travel for a while.
I'm locked in the office for the next several weeks.
That's good.
That's cool.
I'm going away for a couple of days, 4th of July weekend, but that's about it. So, but we'll be here, and we will. You know what next week's going to be? Next week's going to be our June issue of Six Colors Magazine, because otherwise we will be out of time. So it better happen then. But it's
June,
big week. Big month. Lots of stuff going on. And so we'll do that.
As always, we should remind our listeners to The Secret Podcast. If you have questions,
yes, please send them on to us. If you have questions,
answer them probably,
or requests
even
for articles, because we like getting story ideas, and some of those are good for the magazine especially. And then also, I have an idea. I'm just throwing it out there. One silly thing that I'm going to write for the Six Colors Magazine is, the developer James Thompson, who does PCalc and DragThing, stayed with us for a couple of days, and he brought Scottish sweets with him. So I'm going to do a comprehensive review of the Scottish sweets that were provided by James Thompson. So if you want to hear me review, or you won't hear it, you'll have to hear it with your brain, because you'll be reading it. If you want to read a review of what I thought of Tunnock's Tea Cakes, that will be one of the many features in the blockbuster June issue of the Six Colors Magazine next week.
You don't get that content anywhere else.
No, I'm not putting that on the public internet. That's just for subscribers, because it's so important and valuable. And I thought it would be fun.
This is what your money gets you.
I thought it would be fun to do that. So we'll do that. Thanks for subscribing. And look for the magazine next week, and we will also do another secret podcast next week. Stay cool if you're in a summery place. Stay warm if you're in a wintry place. Stay off the betas unless you are a very dangerous person. And bye, Dan. Talk to you next week.
Bye, Jason.